President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. Got a great guest for you tonight, and I know people are tuning in from all over the planet on this June the 11th on the west coast of the United States, or June the 12th on the east coast, central time zones, and everywhere east of the western end of the Atlantic Ocean. So nice to have you with us. Lots going on, lots going on. My goodness, they put Obama's picture on MTV 2 tonight. And I just went around the horn for a moment here before we went on the air to see what was going on, and he's just plastered everywhere. Pretty soon he'll be on Home Shopping Network. And they'll sell us something new, I'm sure. And it'll be cheap, too. Well, rather than go off on a political topic, per se, at the outset of tonight's show, I want to let my listening audience know that I've been getting a lot of hits to see this video of the May 29th event. That was the phone call from space. Yes, it did come from space. I had nothing to do with facilitating that phone call except being on the receiving end, as was my guest Jim Murray. And I posted some photos on the website. Many people have looked at it, probably thousands so far, and people are rebroadcasting the show around the world. So I'm pleased about that. This is a message that must get out. This isn't about making money. If it was on the mainstream media, they'd already have this in a Hollywood movie. And yet I wanted to document this event so that you could see the pictures at the same time General Jeremiah was talking to us and telling us what's going on, really going on in this part of the universe. And I don't mean the global warming pandemic or the Barack Obama pandemic, nor do I mean the swine flu. There's a lot going on in space, and it has everything to do with this planet. It's time people start waking up. Now, for those of you who are awake, you may find this rather interesting. I put on my a document page of my website, directlightproductions.com, I put up a copy of Servers of the Divine Plan. Those of you who are already beyond this point to where you've given up trying to convince politicians to start listening, or people that run large corporations, I mean, we're scalp deep in corruption right now, folks, and we can change it, and we have to use something that will open up our spiritual warrior nature. And this book, Servers of the Divine Plan, explains the whole deal. It's a really, really spiritual piece of literature, and I have to say, as I read this, that I am remembering things, and I have been remembering them for a long time, especially who I am and why I came here. And tonight's guest also is an individual that knows why he's here, and believe you me, we're going to hear about that, as well as what is going on around the country. He's in touch with many people in the military and former military members, people who have sacrificed their life, put their life on the line for us. Now, it doesn't mean that we condone war like the government wages it, or as governments around the world wage it, because they wage it to make money. And this gentleman tonight happens to be the great nephew of Major General Smedley D. Butler, who wrote a book called War is a Racket. And he's going to be on our show all month, once a week. He has his own radio show, which is heard on Wind Talkers and also Blog Talk Radio. It's heard around the world, I have to say, and when he's on my show, we get a much larger listening audience, so he's bringing a lot of people on board, and we're appreciative of that. I came to meet him through a late friend, Marianne Ponder, and in fact, she brought tonight's guest and Dr. Greg Evenson and I together. And we will continue working together as we search for the truth and bring it to you. So with that, I welcome tonight's guest, my very dear friend, Mr. Drew Raines. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thanks, sir. We appreciate it. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Sometimes we'll sleep, but I don't know when.
Yes, I know. Oh, man, there's just so much going on. Drew, you have been doing a lot of radio today. I listen to your show almost every day, I have to say, and, you know, time permitting, as long as I'm not on somebody else's show, it's incredible how much you work, how involved you are in bringing to light what's going on in our country and in the world. And you certainly belie the mainstream media's spin on what the rest of the world thinks of Americans. They know governments are corrupt because they have governments in other parts of the world, too. It's not something just exclusive to us. And they have corruption. And they see the war. We have been fortunate not seeing as much war. But we have other kinds of war going on here. We have a war on food, and a war on clean water, and a spiritual war against us. These people would rather we go to hell with them than really receive our divine birthright. And I know you confront this every day. Tell us what's going on today with you and some of the things that you're involved in right now. If you can.
You haven't got enough radio time to talk about what I'm involved in. Oh, my Lord. I want to tell you, I'm an electronic engineer, self-taught on computers. Literally, the government considers me a major hacker because I'm able to get around what they do to try to stop me getting information out to fellow Marines, former military, U.S. military troops around the world. I network, and I use that. I've been using this term going on 15 years. Most people say, well, you know, we got to communicate with everybody, and I used this term in 1988 when I had moved into Arkansas. I said, we've got to network with each other if we're going to get our businesses united in an effort to fight what Clinton is trying to do to suppress the electronic manufacturing plants in Arkansas and sell them outside the country. I said that in 1988, and by 1992, 35,000 people in Arkansas lost their jobs because Clinton moved them all the way to China, not only as the governor, but as the new president of the United States. You ask me what I do, somewhere along the line, I got a burr underneath my saddle. I guess it comes with the genes of the family. On one family tree, I go directly to Major General Smedley Darlington Butler through my grandmother's mother, and he is my great-great uncle.
Oh, great-great uncle. I'm sorry.
And then on the other side of the tree, I go directly to the Sioux Indian Nation tribe, not to anybody specific, just a regular warrior. Okay. On another side of the family, I go directly to through the Cajun French ancestry that came from Manitoba and as well as from the northeastern side of Canada, where the French Indians the French kind of married into the Canadian Indians of the East Coast there in Nova Scotia,
mm-hmm.
and the English and the French kind of kicked the Cajuns out because they came from the poor regions of western France, directly related to the Khazars of Russia and the Tartars of the Ukraine, and migrated down into places like North Carolina and South Carolina. Thank God we didn't land in Kennebunkport. Can you imagine Cajuns from from Massachusetts? But we came all the way into Louisiana, and we've you know that the ancestry through Louisiana puts us directly in with the Spanish families. So I have a unique history. Back about 30 years ago, I was able to do this financially. And in doing so, I started marrying and marrying information and networking with first cousins, second cousins, third cousins, fourth cousins, ancestors, finding family trees. That's how. And my second cousin was the one that advised me of my relationship to Major General Smedley Darlington Butler. Another third cousin advised me of my relationship directly to the bodyguard stands of General George Washington. A third cousin that is basically French, she informed me that we have an ancestor that stood alongside William the Conqueror invading England and settled in Wales, and his four sons one went to Ireland, one went to Scotland, and the other one went into London. And that from that tree we have the Raines pub, and in Wales we have the Raines inn, this must just like a eating restaurant. What do you call those places where people go out where a family has a house and they rent out the rooms? I forgot what they call that here in America.
A hotel or a motel?
Hostel. A hostel. It's called a hostel in Europe. Over here, we call it something else. I forgot what it is. Larissa, if you're chiming in, tell me what it is. You know more about that than I do. But you asked me what I get involved in. I'm on the phone when I hit the deck in the morning, usually while I'm sipping on a cup of hot chocolate with somebody around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it's with Megan Love, a personal friend of mine in Australia, who helped set up my website, A Marine's Disquisition, and within the confines of the University of Australia. And since it was set up in 2005, it's never been taken down.
Well, that's great. Now you're I want to just comment on all these familial connections you have. The only place I think you failed to mention as far as ancestry is Kenya, Hawaii, and Indonesia.
I don't have anybody from Kenya. I can take the ancestry straight back to 976, where the Tartar commanding officer that became the security officer for the French king in 978.
Wow. Well, yeah, I think you get my point, though.
Yeah, I understand. If you really want to get involved, all of these people I've mentioned is relationships, with the exception of the Sioux Tribe Indians, because all I can do is just trace us directly to the Sioux Tribe and the Cheyenne tribe, because the woman that my ancestor married was the daughter of somebody important in a Cheyenne tribe who married a warrior in a Sioux tribe to get those two warring factions to declare peace amongst themselves. And there's no history on the, either one of those sides, it just dies right there on her, at her ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
but,
you can certainly go back a lot further than some of the people that I've investigated.
It wasn't, and it wasn't hard to do. Back in 1977, when I left the Marine Corps, it only cost $500. But $500 in 1977 was a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
And I've had direct relations going directly to the Alamo that we thought we had ancestors at the Alamo, and I probably do, but I just don't know who they are. But what it, all of this brings up to be, I come from a long line of men and women who have stood by leaders to bring forth truth, justice, and honor. The Tartars of Armenia stood up against Genghis Khan. The Cossacks stood up against Genghis Khan at the steppes of Kazan, Russia. I get goosebumps when I read into history. It's like there's somebody standing behind me tapping on my shoulder. This is what your family has done. And, Don, I look at this, and it all gets down to why am I here at this time in history, me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in reincarnation. I believe that if, when you die, your soul goes to God, the creator of all the universe, period. That if you're not in the body, you're with God in a sense of spiritual realm. There's no reincarnation. And somewhere along the line, I see myself coming here, choosing to be in the flesh, because God wanted all of his angels to go into the flesh to have free choice to choose whether they wanted to be with him or they wanted to be with his cherub that we call Lucifer. And that cherub is what's causing this spiritual war throughout the heavens. And we, in this flesh form here on this planet, have been are the last vestiges before the total elimination of this cherub that turned evil, who thought that he wanted to be God, but he never will be. He may have great powers, but God created everything, including Lucifer. And Lucifer is the warring faction, as you very well know, Marianne Ponder, who united us and many of our people that we know. You're talking about a person that networked.
Mm-hmm.
She was fluent in networking and getting things involved on the little meager income that she had.
Yeah, that's true.
And so going back to why you and I are here, well, I chose to be here because the greatest fight in known history, and that we know in our physical realm, is coming place right now, and I feel in my heart I chose to be here at this time because I'm spiritually able to stand up and know the difference between the falsities of evil and the greatness and kindness and goodness of good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. If I look at my life, and I was born into a musical family, and I studied music, much of it on my own, believe it or not. I could do more by myself than I could be taught, and that knowledge came with me. You know, I always had that connection to the Creator. And he gave me the ability to orchestrate things. You were talking about networking, and that reminds me of one of the skills you learn when you become a musical arranger who writes out the parts for the individual musicians to play. And when everyone's playing, the music's got to sound right. If it's a bad arrangement, the listening audience is going to know. Now, when you get into orchestration, it opens up a realm of possibilities of choosing who the participants are going to be, you see. And so it's an expansive, multidimensional way of creating the arrangement to know that. And then you get into the theory or the laws of music. And, you know, one of my later music mentors, I had studied at what was called the Famous Arrangers Clinic in Las Vegas, and they had a whole slew of really accomplished musical arrangers and orchestrators and composers, and they were even dynamite musicians, teaching these classes, people like Quincy Jones, Marty Paich, who was a well-known television music producer, and produced many albums. These guys could snap their fingers and get 20 or 25 of the best musicians in the world in a recording session. So I learned a lot from these guys. And one guy, Wes Hensel, started a class. I was actually about to go into junior high school, and I was in the master's program, which was college professors that had either master's degrees or doctorates in their field. And I was just happy to be in that class. You know, it didn't even dawn on who I was around. So I was highly influenced by these professionals who were masters of their craft. And when I got into research and when I started writing and then started doing radio, I brought all of that experience from musical performance into the picture, but I began to understand how God allowed me to see what was going on in the world, how it fit together, like a musical arrangement or an orchestration. The problem, though, is it was the opposite of what good music is. It was making noise. It was distortion and cacophony, if you know what I mean. And that's the nature of war. And that's the nature of mind control and oppression of people, a genocide and eugenics programs and all of these sinister things that they do. So I could compare what I research to what I know from music, and I would always see that it was on the opposite end of the scale, if you understand my meaning. So even with a musical background, one can develop an understanding of these things, because everything really is designed, it's created with certain components that make it work, that make it exist. And when you're talking about negativity, those that just focus on negativity are really going to have to claim some responsibility or accountability at some point in their near future for all the havoc and destruction and death that they've caused on this planet. Do you agree with that?
I agree 100%.
So you can see how God is just absolutely unquestionably perfect in how he makes things work. It is we that screws him up, isn't it?
Better words could not be written.
Well,
so, Marianne Ponder is sitting out there relishing the fact that we're able to network and get this verbiage out there in and around the world through your internet service, through my phone bridge and Wind Talkers Radio Network. And I got an IM here from somebody that says, I can't find Wind Talkers Network on the internet. Well, I'm going to tell you something, guy. You're not. I'm glad that you evidently listened to my show, because you found a way to get an IM over to me without me even saying anything. The Wind Talkers Radio Network is a loosely bound group of men and women, mostly Marines, but not exclusive, mostly military, but not exclusive, of military men and women who are retired, who've resigned their commissions, who've been medically discharged, who live around the world in the United States, Canada, Russia, England, Wales, Spain, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, you name it. they're out there in every clime and every place, united on one common goal, and that is to tell the elitist that, hell no, we're not going to go. We've had enough. We're going to get the truth. We're going to find it. We're going to pick it up, and we're going to rebroadcast it, or we're going to broadcast it from our radio stations that you mandate that we have some license with this idea that we, the people, can't control our own businesses, and we can't control, be responsible for ourselves, so we must have a license because we can't have the responsibility. You know, that's what Wind Talkers is all about.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up this show live. Matter of fact, it's being carried live on two radio stations. One's a 50,000 watter, one's a 30,000 watter. And it's drive time for people to go home in New Zealand. And people on Highway 8 are tuning in down there to Bobby's radio station. And instead of listening to the rerun of my show this morning, they're getting a live show of me.
Well, that's fantastic. And me, I guess.
And you, obviously. And they're trying to figure out, because, well, does this guy ever sleep?
Yeah, people ask me that, and the answer is no. what you're describing, okay, this is natural for people to communicate. I mean, we are connected to each other by the Creator. And it seems, while you were describing this, you know, this consciousness was flowing through me that everything that we are confronted with on this planet is designed to confound that connection, networking, communication. I mean, when is it going to get to where we have to apply for a license just to speak to each other when we pass each other on the street? That's how ridiculous it is. But because they do this at a snail's pace, or at least up until the last 10 years or so, it was a snail's pace. And certainly since 9/11, it's gone into full gear. These people are getting desperate, and we've talked about this because we know that things are changing, that people are coming into an awareness or a realization of why they're here. That wasn't a question many people asked themselves in the past. At least if I look at history, and I look at where consciousness and technology are side by side, moving down parallel tracks. Consciousness is sort of catching up to the technology. And in the process of catching up, we're discovering that many of the things that we were told about the past are just lies. And so we can then deduce or conclude that if they lied to us so much in the past, they must be lying now. So that makes us truth seekers, doesn't it? And it's interesting that we come from such diverse backgrounds, and yet here we are talking about the same thing.
Exactly. And we feel it. We're like warrior brothers that have come to fruition because the battle is upon us. It's not upon us 5 years from now. It's upon us now.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. Now there is definitely a struggle for the mind, and the body. I mean, that's obvious. Everything that we're taught and everything that we're confronted with has to do with our appearance and our physical or our material possessions. All the focus is on that, and of course that's all these characters can focus on themselves is garnering all the possessions of everyone else and turning us into slaves. We didn't come here for that reason, did we, Drew?
No, this is one of the things that Major General Smedley Darlington Butler is so renowned for, is that he realized that he was nothing more than a security guard protecting the elitist and the elitist property on four continents, and that is why he wrote War is a Racket, not to make to get rich not to get his name spread out already in the world of famous people, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler's name could be mentioned in every little hamlet, every little town, every farming community in the United States in the 1920s, and it was better known than the President Harding's name in the respect by name and what President Harding did to get to the point of where he would be running for the presidency of the United States. Everybody knew Major General Smedley Darlington Butler, the only officer of all branches of the services to hold two Medal of Honors through two warring campaigns and a third equivalent Medal of Honor known as the Marine Corps Brevet Medal from a third campaign known as the Boxer Rebellion. And he was not a big man. He was 5'7", 5'8". And when he walked in the field with fellow Marines, he didn't run out there with a lot of gold or braid on his hat. He didn't wear uniforms that stood him out amongst the crowd. 90% of the time, he looked like a private because mm-hmm. he would pull his insignia off his collar to hide the fact that he was a general. And it's well known that the movie that George C. Scott played in
Patton.
The World War II depiction of Patton, there is yeah. a scene there that's totally a total lie. Did not ever happen in George Patton's life,
mm-hmm.
even though it could have, but nobody remembers. Nobody's alive to remember it, in the sense that he was that he did do that in a field of battle, directing traffic with tanks. However, in World War I, when Major General Smedley Darlington Butler, who wasn't a major general at the time, he was just a full general. They had him in control of the rear echelon in South France, where all the troops were sent that were wounded, and he cleaned this camp up from its massive medical problems. And in one of the things that come out of that was the fact that a medical truck came into camp on a heavy rain downpour and was stuck in the mud outside the headquarters, and he walked outside and after about 15 minutes and used his straight Quaker language, very proper, no, never cursing, and asking, "What in the world is going on? Can't you guys get this truck out of here?" And they had been trying for 30 minutes, and the driver of the truck said, "We just can't get it out." And he says, "I think we can. Come on, boys, let's push this thing out." And the respect that the Marines, you know, there was not one place you could put a hand on this truck, really push this truck out of this mud that it was all the way up to its axle. Butler, but very back in, shoving the hardest through mud where it's hauled. And there are officials that lived on into the 60s that did interviews that are recorded today, specifically by PBS, that depict remembering the general moving that truck and the fact that military men, I mean Army and Marines, loved this man because he would eat in the mess hall with them, making sure the food was exactly what it should be, making sure the supplies got to the front line timely. And we don't have leaders like that today. We don't have officers willing to reach up to their collar and take their collar stakes off, put them in their pocket, and go down to the mess hall and eat the food the regular troops are eating.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have leaders like Major General Smedley Darlington Butler as a captain would stand in the front lines with two 45 pistols and fight the most egregious military onslaught with just six other men, and taking down not one or two or three dozen, but 100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was wounded a number of times, and yet because the Purple Heart was not available, he was never awarded one. That is the only medal the United States Marine Corps has had and has up to this that was available to all military through 1930, the only medal that Major General Smedley Darlington Butler was never presented.
And, you know, they could give him the medal posthumously, but likely because of his treatise on war, War is a Racket, he probably made some enemies.
There is another incident where he was submitted into receiving a Medal of Honor. But because of the treaties of War is a Racket, they have not moved that forward at all. And as far as the Purple Hearts are concerned, the Marine Corps and the Army felt that if they awarded the Purple Hearts to anyone in the Boxer Rebellion or the Nicaraguan campaign, they would have to award medals to all the people that were wounded in battle from 1868 all the way up until 1919.
Yeah. Now, so when we talk about someone who took the time to expose and in great detail, step by step, all the different ways money are made, and of course, I'm sure he could have added things to it, but he was very thorough in describing even how they make money off of shoes and how hundreds of thousands of pairs of shoes, if not even millions of pairs of shoes, were made that were never worn. Somebody in some corporation somewhere made a ton of money off the people, and every time they have a war, this is what goes on. This is what's occurring today. This is why we bring this up.
Exactly. And Don, he laid it out so succinctly that a common eighth grader could decipher what he wrote in that treatise.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in doing so, I mean, you can compare what was being made and put in storage facilities that was never worn, never used, dried out, was just money that the American government, the elitist in government, government control, spent the people's money for the greed to put the money in somebody else's pocket. Whether the money was given directly to them is debatable, but the people that worked in government made sure their friends and cronies became wealthy, and they, in turn, when they left government service, were able to have a cushy job with a good income later on.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
People don't understand that's going on today.
Oh, yeah.
I've got so much to say, but go ahead.
Oh well, I wanted to make a point here because people look at the Constitution and they look at our laws, and you and I have discussed this, and we've discussed it with our own guests on our shows, and we've discussed it as guests on other people's shows, and I'm sure we've even talked to God about this. You have people who are responsible for what goes on in this country because they are serving the people according to the Constitution. Yet they are serving themselves, and we have learned through time that the majority of people who have made it to the Congress or the Senate or even the highest office of the land with the current, and I hate to use this word, president being the least experienced of anyone that ever sat in that seat in the White House, there's this affiliation with attorneys or lawyers, okay? And and they come up with all kinds of ways as wordsmiths to hide the truth in grammar or in the use of a word that people don't understand. They present a word in a way that it on the surface appears to mean one thing, when in reality they're doing it the way they do it. They're using the language the way they do to mask what the true intention is. And it's gotten so bad that it's become criminal. So it has always been involved with organized crime. In other words, government permitted organized crime to exist because they got a take of the action. And organized crime got so big that they began telling government what to do. Organized crime became so wealthy that they could buy these big corporations and rule people that way. And you have lobbying in Washington as an example, but lobbying is a nice word for bribery or blackmail or extortion, because they open up the doors to every dark act that a human being could commit, and they force people to commit these just to exist or to maintain their position in power. And really, they're dispensable, aren't they? They can get rid of anybody they choose. And so when we look at the purpose of life and we look at what's going on this planet, and I'm coming to my point here, why do you think God put us here in the beginning? I mean, was he punishing us on some level, or was he giving us the opportunity to make a choice, just to raise consciousness by giving us the freedom to make a choice between whether we were going to be destructive or creative, whether we were going to be filled with hate and murder, or we were going to love and create life. You get the meaning, I think, of what I'm saying. What is your take on this? Because it seems rather insane.
It is, and I will reiterate, me and the listeners are given a choice of choosing exactly what you say, because it's a matter of free will, and you have to take this, put it in capital letters, and put parentheses around it. The choice of free will to accept the true God, creator of all, and understand that what understanding and belief is, as well, you know, the truth and justice and honor are, as well as forgiveness, and able to look and not hold hatred in your heart, forgive, let live, move on in a spiritually as well as physically, and understand that your physical being gets closer to the spiritual realm as you get to a more level plateau of understanding what free will and goodness are, and those that are evil will perish. Literally, they will be not in your imagination. You may know of somebody who is so evil that you can't believe the despicable actions. Pol Pot, for one. He is the epitome of evil in modern times. For every Marine that's ever stationed in Cambodia that has Cambodian friends, or had Cambodian friends, because those Cambodians, over 3 million Cambodians, were wiped off the planet. A population of 6 million became a population of less than 3 in a matter of 3 years.
You think that's why the Zionist media was so intent on keeping our presence in Cambodia out of the news, even though it came out?
Yes.
Because of the genocide that was going on there.
Yes.
And
a lot of Americans don't, to this day, the vast amount of Americans question, were we in Cambodia? a vast amount of Americans, and in the poorer cities, large cities, where most of the people that are in school drop out in the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, and I'm talking about you out there in Chicagoland, in New York land, in L.A. land, in San Francisco land, in Miami land, in Atlanta land. Those cities, there is an enormous amount of people that are our age in the 50s that never got out of the 6th grade. And in the last 40 years, there's an enormous amount of children in those same cities who haven't made it past the 10th grade. And it's getting worse. And you ask, I'll tell you, it's free will, but we chose, you and I, many of the listeners who believe in God, who believe that loyalty above all else except honor, chose to be here at this time in this realm. And we communicate with friends and relatives who are evil. We communicate and network with friends that are being persuaded by an evil spirit and are being advised by evil spirits, and they are shot. They think they believe in God. They think that they understand that they are doing prayer vigils with God, the Creator, one God of all. They can't, they don't understand how to forgive. They don't understand how to turn the cheek with a friend and come back into that friend's life. They don't understand that all food is created by God, and there are evil factions, manipulators such as Monsanto, Pioneer, Bayer, and a half a dozen other major facilities around the world creating genetically modified food that will kill the masses. But if you, as one of God's creators, sit down and pray over that food, it will be just like the three men in the fire when the Pharisees looked out and say, wait a minute, they're walking out of the fire. There's no one. They're not even singed, but there's a fourth person with them. We only threw three into the fire. Who was that fourth being? That fourth being was Jesus Christ, whose angel being protected the spirit and the physical realm to show that we do have miracles that exist, and we were given a letter. Now, maybe Sir Francis Bacon wrote the King James Bible. Maybe Sir Francis Bacon was the creator of the many of the master plays, such as Dickinson. Maybe the Bible as we see it today may have been created by him, for the King of England, but God's Spirit was there. It's, the Bible was written by man. It has some problems within it because man is inherently got problems with what he puts to print. And you look at this with the fact that all through the Bible, the government was good. Governments are good, and they were created by God. But the bottom line is governments are created by man. God allowed them to be there, and because of our free will. He does not involve himself with the trivialities. He feels that you should be able to live your life free and independent of government.
Yes. You know, Drew, you brought to mind a little exercise that I employ, or I should say employed, because I'm not teaching in schools right now. But I taught music in and I would have the kids sit in a semicircle in the classroom, and I was teaching them to listen and to hear with discernment. And I showed them a little experiment, a little example of how people don't listen. And I said, I guarantee you that I will start with a word, and we will whisper it. I'll whisper that word into the first student sitting at one end of the line, and as it moves, that one word moves all the way to the other end of the line, will have a different word. Now, what that word will be, I can't tell you exactly, but I could guess that it would almost be the opposite. And I said, let's show this in practice. So I leaned over and I whispered in the first student's ear the word white. Okay, went down. They were chuckling as they told each other the secret word. And I said, make sure you whisper it that no one else can hear what you're saying except the person you're sharing the word with. When we got to the end of the line, the word was black. So now, where in the line that occurred, I was not concerned. The problem was that all of the students were not listening. Certainly one student didn't listen. I'm sure that the white turned to gray, turned to green, turned to brown, if you get the idea. Information goes through the same process. And yet we have things happening before our eyes, some staged, some is very artificial in nature. It's all illusion, really. When we get down to the Creator and our real discernment, we're seeing a movie. We're seeing things that are scripted out for us, and with great care, designed to appear to be or mean something. And I'm referring to even the Bible, because God could give someone a vision, or the scribes that listened to the accounting of that vision or witnessed some event could certainly err in the totality of what occurred. Now, we presume because God inspired the Bible to be written that a certain story was that story, and that's the only way it happened. That's not necessarily the case, is it?
Exactly right. And I'm going to chime in and enhance what you said, because I remember Mrs. Tierney at Barrett Elementary School in Shreveport, Louisiana, doing the exact experiment that you said, and with one exception. She had the first student with her back, to the rest of the class come up to the desk, and Miss Tierney, who was the most feared teacher, you always remember the most feared teacher in your elementary school, but she was the best. But she had the student, she told the student a word and asked the student to write it down. And then she lined up 36 kids. Now, this is a classroom in 1957. Obviously, we have segregation in the South. Well, we had segregation in all 50 states, or 48 states at the time.
Yeah.
But in Louisiana, Miss Tierney had the braveness to go to the black elementary schools and help tutor black children. And the black teacher would come to Barrett and help tutor white kids. That was unheard of.
That's a novel approach in those days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wrote down a term. The kids lined up. I was the last one in line. The word that I got was steak.
Okay.
The word that Miss Tierney started with was vegetable.
Now that really speaks volumes of what we're talking about here, right? I mean,
exactly.
We repeat
now,
these.
Granted,
things.
I was Don. I was like barely 9 years old. Okay, but that's something that is one of the things that stands out in classroom, in my mind, in my heart, all the way today. There's another incident that I can remember standing in her classroom and misspelling the word vegetable. later on that in that classroom year.
Now, did you spell it S-T-I-C-K?
No, I didn't. I wasn't that far off.
Okay.
But it was a game in which she was teaching us how to spell,
mm-hmm.
and a number of the boys that were, because we, it was, the game was set up as a team, and a number of the boys chastised me and got all over me because I misspelled the word vegetable instead of choosing a lesser, more lesser difficult word in this game. It was lined up like a baseball. And if I could have spelt vegetable, I would have been able to hit a home run in which my team, the team I was on, would have won the game right there by me. Instead, I was just the first out of that particular inning. But I misspelled the word, and I got chastised because I was willing to gamble and lead. And I did not understand the fact that at that time that I had that gene of leadership to where I didn't care what other people thought, but I was going to try. You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I was going to move my team forward. I could have easily have been the most, the fastest, the most strongest, the most elite of the Marine platoon that I was in boot camp in the Marine Corps. But instead, I would always fall back and help the weaker link within my platoon so my platoon as a team could defeat the other platoons that we were against. And at the end of boot camp, my pride was because when our platoon graduated, we had taken every ribbon available to a Marine Corps platoon throughout boot camp. There were no one else, no other platoon had a ribbon on their guide arm. But my platoon had them all because of the team effort that we had. And I was, I don't pat myself on the back as being the leader of that platoon at that time. I pat myself on the back that I helped other Marines understand that it's a team effort, and if you can't do the team effort in peace, how can you possibly do it when your life is on the line in war?
Exactly. You have to be able to translate all that that comradeship to the battlefield. You know,
and
that
and I've got to stand and salute you, Don. You say that you were a music teacher. Well, you may be a music teacher working with young men and young women, but at the same time, you would have been a regimental commander in a war zone, because teaching music is just like leading men in war. You have to hear the music, and people have got to stop and listen, because the music is all around us,
mm-hmm.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you have to open your ears to hear God's music.
Well, you know, my understanding of music transcends into the universe, and you can see God's intelligent design in everything. And everything that God created was created with the ability to sustain itself. And when we look at mankind today and the state that not just our country but the whole world is in, those that consider themselves privileged to reign above us, to see themselves higher than us, have accomplished what they've accomplished, not through God's laws, but by confronting God's laws and really distorting them or ignoring them totally, creating their own laws for their own designs, their own purposes. And eventually that has to fail, doesn't it?
Exactly. You know, the United States of America is the prime directive example of leaving everybody else around the world alone to do their evil whatever, and we the people allowing our friends and neighbors to have responsibility and self-freedom, because all one has to do is look when religions of Europe got so bad, the bravest of those believers left Europe and came to this continent seeking religious freedom. And because of the religious freedom, we graduated over 400 years. People think that, well, this nation's only been around for 230 years. But in all honesty, we have been on this continent since 1500s. A lot of people leave out the history of the fact that we had towns, you know, pioneers, so to speak, that came from Europe on boats and vessels in the 1520s set up their homesteads and helped create this nation. How many times do you pick up a book and read what happened on North American continent between 1525 and 1600?
Well, there were people here, too, when they came here.
And they lived with those people, those American, as we call them, American Indians, in freedom with no problem. Yes, the American Indians fought amongst themselves, but it was for food. It was for territorial rights, so another tribe of Indians wouldn't horn in on the food that was in this territory that was being harvested by that particular American Indian tribe. And ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, in the 1500s, there were no guns in the hands of American Indians at all. They used slingshots, bows and arrows, and spears. And they very effectively used traps. And we had Indian tribes all up and down the American East Coast, as we call it today. But you don't hear about Indian massacres in the 1500s. There were no massacres in the 1500s. It didn't become. We didn't have Indian problems until the French and the greed of the French and the greed of the British, who were fighting themselves along with fighting Spain, came in and taught the American Indians the evil, because American Indians would do what, Don? They would harvest one of God's creatures, i.e. a deer, or an antelope, or a buffalo, and they would pray over it in their way of praying to the great spirit of the sky, to the spirit of the buffalo, to the spirit of the deer, to the spirit of the duck, and give thanks that animal lived so it could feed him. How many people stop and think about praying over your food today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know I kind of get off on tangents, Don, and it sounds like I'm a preacher, but I'm trying to get people to understand and network together is this is not a self-righteous world. You are here with others and free will. Insurance does not protect you in your car from a wreck. It only provides money to fix it. A driver's license does not protect you from a drunk driver who has no responsibility behind the wheel. A license to own a gun does not protect you from the accident of a child picking up the gun and shooting you.
Yeah. Now, Drew, we're short on time here. So, as a wrap, I want to touch on this for a moment here and allow you to express what's occurring around the world. Of course, with the network that you've described, especially amongst those in the military, and we salute those in the military that are putting their life out on the line for whatever cause they feel they're doing that. They should be honored for that. That doesn't mean that we condone the wanton killing of innocent people just because somebody wants to put an oil pipeline through a country or take over the drug industry in another country. But you are also meeting people. People are calling into your show or texting you messages who are hearing these broadcasts around the world. And these are regular, ordinary people. They're not in the military. They're the people of these countries where these soldiers that you network with are. What are you hearing from other people in the country? From people in other countries of the world. What are you hearing from those regular people? What's going on in their country?
You want to hear the bottom line?
Sure.
The bottom line from the normal, everyday Russian, the everyday Chinese girl or Chinese boy, from the everyday Vietnamese, from the everyday citizen in Australia to the everyday citizen of Venezuela, Americans have become individually, they're still respected. But as Americans, they're hated. They're looked at like the Gestapo, SS stormtroopers of Hitler, the KGB of Stalin, the Stasis. They are looked at as being the epitome of evil. We have good Marines, and we've got evil Marines. We've got honorable Marines, and we have men who are wearing the Marine Corps uniform that in all reality, should be placed before a firing squad and sent to God for the evil that they do. And these people around the world communicate to me because they remember the days when a Marine platoon would come to the aid of the orphanage, would come to the aid of the town and help fix a little road in the middle of Japan, or southern Japan, where all of a sudden, out of the blue, a 6x truck led by some Cajun Marine drive into this small town that hasn't got a paved road, and 60 men get out and work from 9 o'clock in the morning until dark and lay used railroad ties for the main street that's 200 yards long, so the people could walk down the street and not be sinking up to their knees in mud. And those little things, the Japanese of 1971 have respect for those Marines that I led to help that little community, or to that orphanage in Da Nang that I went out and assisted with. And it wasn't me, it was men, Americans, that saw a need and were willing to network and help another human being. Today, America has lost its way. We are invaded by the Illuminatist, the Illuminati, the elitist, the evil. They've taken control of the government, and they're using the government against us, with our money, using our money and taking our money away from us, destroying real money and putting out this falsity of paper money that has no backing, that has nothing. And at some point, they're robbing the treasury, taking the gold, taking the silver, and now they're taking the food, and the next step is to take the animals. And all of this through the national identification system, and it's not just going on in the United States of America. The control elitists are doing it around the world.
Yes. Well, we've got to wrap, but I wanted you to get that out, that at least that message, because...
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah. Can you say...
Do I have 30 seconds?
I'll give you 30 seconds.
I would like to tell the Marine buddies in Florida that I stand by them when they say that there is the 83-year-old Iwo Jima hero who was murdered by two illegal immigrants, thugs, in front of his grandchild at a mall, shopping mall. Those men should be placed in front of a firing squad, because you've got 25 people that witnessed this. He was 84 years old. He was a kind fellow, an elder statesman, and he was shot just like a dog for a wallet with $12 in it.
My goodness. Well,
that happened today in Florida.
Now, our military is being, I mean, this is just an observation. Our military is being desensitized for what may lie ahead when they come back here to this country. There will come a time when our military is going to be ordered back to this country and turned against its own people.
Write that down, and we'll talk about it next week for sure, because I've got some great news. Over 80% of the enlisted Marines below the rank of Master Sergeant are not going to do it. I have hearing this all around the world from Marines who are saying that before I turn my gun on a civilian on the land in the within the land at back home, I will shoot a fellow Marine.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I brought that up. I intended for us to possibly explore that.
We can explore that next week, because I'm getting more and more of it, and I'm detailing that, and we may have a lieutenant colonel come on us to with us next week to discuss his personal feelings as the commanding officer of a Marine detachment in Afghanistan. He's just returned back to the United States.
Well, that would be great. I'd love to have him on if he'll come on.
So we'll see what we can do with that. He's made it home. He's done this is his third tour of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he knows what the truth is, and he says the truth is horrible.
Yes. Well, we know that, and we certainly feel that, and we can see that. We encourage people to go to your website too, amd.elequity.com.
And can I repeat that again? It's Alpha Michael Delta dot Echo Lima Echo Quebec Ulysses India Tango Yankee dot com.
Now, can you give that out in Morse code?
Morse code is AMD dot EL Equity.
You're as crazy as I am, Drew. I love you for what you're doing. Thanks for being on the show.
God bless you, Don. And make sure you keep an hour out for me, because I want to get you over on my show again.
Okay. You just give me a holler, okay?
I'll do that.
Okay.
Good night, everybody. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio, and our special guest, Drew Malone Raines III, and he'll be with us next week. Be sure to tune in tomorrow night for Jim Murray. We're going to have another great show for you. In the meantime, special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and happiness.